Well.
Do you want to announce that this is continuing?
Continuing case, John Robbins, University of Pittsburgh, National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project.
Mr. Robbins, you want to just state your name?
Well, I'm Jack Robbins, and I think I was left on the Serengeti Plains.
All right, we're going to stop right there.
Mr. Robbins, following the termination of your Ford Foundation assignment in 1973, what influenced your return to Pittsburgh?
Well, there were two factors. One was that the only foreign assignment that the foundation had opened for me was as deputy representative in the Philippine Islands. Well, I could have led a very pleasurable life in the Philippines. Manila can be a very pleasant city if your income is substantial. I felt that the Philippines was kind of a backwater in the world, but while it'd be interesting to be there, nevertheless, it was out of the main currents. And I had no great desire to go there. Meantime, I had been invited to Pittsburgh by the Allegheny Conference to make their annual dinner speech. And the speech apparently was very well received and was regarded locally, I think, as an infusion of new ideas into what had become a less than active public-private role. And to my own surprise, I was approached by Henry Hillman, who was then chairman of the conference, with a proposal that I return to Pittsburgh in a joint arrangement between the University of Pittsburgh and the Allegheny Conference to be both a professor at the university and to be program advisor to the conference.
Was the urban redevelopment still in progress when you returned after 10 years?
No, what had happened was that under the Flaherty administration, there had been an estrangement between the city government and the conference and the people the conference represents. And there had been a slowdown, I think, of public activity. The Flaherty administration put its emphasis on frugality and not development. And so there had been, I would say, a relatively brief time, but an unfortunate time of stagnation. And the Redevelopment Authority had been stripped of many of its personnel and many of its powers and had become a much less active organization. And the problem facing the city, I think, was how could this estrangement be bridged? Could it be bridged at all as long as Mr. Flaherty was mayor? Could it be a rapprochement, some kind worked out between Flaherty and his views and those of the conference people? And as many things happened, nothing happened according to plan. First, Flaherty did moderate his views in the latter years of his administration. He began to be thinking of himself as a statewide candidacy for senator and governor. He also, I think, got tired of his isolation. And he began to make various approaches to the conference. And during his administration, several things were done in the latter part that finally got resolved. First, we were able to resolve the question of the site of the convention center, which had been in dispute for some years. And so there was an agreement. Construction of what is now called the David L. Lawrence Convention Center. There has been a long and apparently insoluble dispute about the so-called Skybus and the mass transit development here. And I had been named by the county commissioners following my return to the board of the Port Authority. I came to the conclusion that we had reached an absolute deadlock, and if we let that deadlock persist, the federal funds would be withdrawn and nothing would happen. And I was in a position to make a proposal which was accepted both by the authority and by the county commissioners and by the mayor and the city government, who was still Mayor Flaherty, that we form a completely unprejudiced, one hoped, commission to establish a new base. And my motion to do that was accepted. We called it a task force. My motion to do that was accepted by all the parties. And what we finally agreed to do was to hire a new consultant agreeable to all parties, that is to the mayor, to the president of the city council, to each of the three commissioners, to the State Department of Transportation and the Port Authority, all the parties, and to abide by the decision that the new consultant would make. But we were able unanimously to choose a consultant in whom all parties had trust. And the recommendation that followed was to substitute the light rail transit vehicle system for the much disputed Skybus system. And so that finally got resolved, and as you can see now, the construction is well on their way, and the system will be operative in 1984. The report of the consultant was improved subsequently by further studies, and I'm satisfied that in the end we've gotten a very good result. Another thing that happened in the Flaherty administration, as I say, we were in a period where there was a kind of a tentative reaching out. We were able to sort of get some things done. We were able to get a study of the North Shore area underway, and we were also able to get the study of Grant Street underway. And those are now bearing fruit in that we're expecting to start the North Shore development this year, and we're expecting to put the new Grant Street into construction this year. So we were beginning to get some grasp on how to get things moving again. Well, then Mr. Flaherty went to Washington to become Deputy Attorney General. And Richard Caligiuri, who was President of City Council, became Mayor. Well, Caligiuri did not have the same views that Flaherty had about a barrier and separation between the public and the private interest here, in the extreme form, or even the moderated form that Pete had. And so he announced, really, that one of his first obligation as mayor was to restore the sense that we once had in Pittsburgh, that together we could do much more than we could do separately. And Caligiuri, whom I knew, but did not know previous to my return to Pittsburgh, he's in another generation really, had asked me if I would become chairman of the Redevelopment Authority, which I did in May of 1970. Carter was elected in 77. And I've continued to be active in several public roles since that time here. One as chairman of the Redevelopment Authority, and then we immediately began to make the Redevelopment Authority a very active and aggressive agency again.
Could we just return for a minute to, when you returned to Pittsburgh, you came back to really three professional assignments, as program advisor to the Allegheny Conference, which you dealt with. Who makes up this group? Is it political
leaders? No, the Allegheny Conference was just the reverse, really. It's economic people. The conference was created just after the Second World War. And it is a civic association, a nonprofit organization, which represents the primarily the corporate leadership of major Pittsburgh industries. It's had a long life for a civic organization. I'll say it was started in 1943 to be a post-war planning an action group. It became operative strongly in 1946 and 47 in support of the smoke control program and other things, and in the promotion of Gateway Center and the origination of the Redevelopment Authority and other.
It's been closely tied to the Renaissance.
You can get a debate who created the first Renaissance. Was it the city government or was it the conference? Nashua was both. And it was the vehicle by which the corporate interest here communicated primarily with the public officials, and which from time to time has been able to find planning money or operative money some either some foundations or other bodies, which is used for public purposes. And the present director of the Allegheny Conference is Robert B. Pease, P-E-A-S-E. And Bob and I have had a very long relationship. I hired him as a young engineer out of the Carnegie Mellon to go to work for the Redevelopment Authority in the very early days there. And so our personal relationship obviously continues. The conference is governed by its executive committee, and its executive committee includes just about the whole roster of what they're called CEOs, chief executive officers of the corporations. At the present time, the chairman of the conference is Jim Higgins, who has just retired as chairman of the Mellon Bank, and the president is Jerry McAfee, who has just retired as chairman or chief executive officer of Gulf Oil. Well, that represents the, and in the past presidents have been H.J. Hyden, Henry Hillman, and people of that caliber.
You returned then to that assignment and to Professor of Public Affairs at the
University, yes.
Can you tell us something about that assignment?
Well, pretty much what the name implies. I'm called a university professor, which is supposed to be a title of great honor. What it really means is that no department wants you. But I have no departmental responsibilities.
I'm sure that's the best.
And I make my own teaching and research responsibilities as I make them. And in the last year or so, I've declared an informal sabbatical. I've really put all my attention into the public programs in which I'm involved.
You're not teaching
then? Currently I'm not, but I expect to resume teaching shortly.
I see. How do you find the student today as compared with your days at the university?
Well, I don't know if I can make that comparison. Well, the first thing is far more of them, obviously. We've greatly increased the number of people attending college. And I think the university is a far better educational institution than it was, obviously, in the 1930s when I was here. And the student body is a wider body and much more representative, I think, of the
cross-section
of the whole population. And I would think, and I have no way to measure the relative abilities of the class of 34 as against the class of 82.
What do you teach?
Well, specifically I've taught in two areas. One is in urban problems of the developing countries. As you know, the urban problems that we have are minuscule, really, when you relate them to the Calcuttas, and the Cairos, and the Shanghais, Mexico cities of the world, which are extremely difficult for the people who live there and for the nations that contain them. That's one. And the other is really subjects that relate to the Pittsburgh Renaissance II program, which is current.
And you're drawing on your
I'm drawing on my life experience.
On your life experience.
Yeah, exactly.
The Ford Foundation and here in the
city. Exactly.
Your third assignment is an associate fellow in the Academy for Contemporary Problems. That's rather an all-inclusive title.
Oh, that was just terminated.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. The Academy was created by a bequest from the Battelle Foundation in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
And it was to do what it is to be a very large, well-financed joint effort of the Academy as created, supported by Battelle and Ohio State University.
Yeah.
And its headquarters were in Columbus, Ohio. And its first and only president is Ralph Widener, W-I-D-N-E-R.
Mm-hmm. How does spell Battelle, Jim?
B-A-T-E-L-L-E, Battelle. Unfortunately, the plans never fully matured. Battelle had to change some of his policies due to a ruling of the Ohio State Attorney General, and the funding that was originally subscribed did not accumulate or was not applied. And the Academy then changed its role to being the research arm for the non-federal governmental organizations, that is the governors and the mayors and the county governments and the state legislatures. And that role is one that has had for several years now. Well, I think that, however, again, probably due to the changes in federal funding and other things that have happened, they've decided to change its title from Academy for Contemporary Problems, which is all included. to something which more clearly describes its role with the state, cities, and counties. And Mr. Widener has resigned, and the reorganization is in process, which will greatly reduce, I think. So my role with the Academy has been incidental. I've been an occasional research project or seminar or conference.
Well, your employment has certainly covered a wide range of assignments,
yes.
But you've always, of course, been active in volunteer roles. You mentioned that you were a member of the Board of Directors of the Port Authority. Could you tell us something about your evaluation of the new subway and how it will affect Pittsburgh?
Well, I think I'm very much concerned about it. I think, and I'm very much in favor of it. It was really a development that was made through this consultant program that I mentioned and its further refinement. One of the major faults of the Skybus proposal was that it didn't penetrate the triangle. It just sort of dumped the passengers at Grand Street, and no provision was made as to what then happened to you.
Yeah.
Somebody would grab another bus or walk. That was always, I think, a flaw in the program, and perhaps something they just didn't feel they were ready to attack. There were only two ways to penetrate the downtown district. One is, of course, on the surface. And if you run trolley cars on the surface, you do two things. First, you clog the streets and impede the normal and proper flow of traffic. Second, you become impeded yourself, and it takes a long time to make the loop, something like 30 or 40 minutes, perhaps, to loop from the time you cross the Smithville Bridge over Smithville Street, over Wood Street, and back around again. And remember, this is only the South Hills corridor we're talking about. Well, the obvious way to avoid that is to put the circulation pattern underground. And one of the things that the Skybus proposal had secured was the right to use an obsolete railroad bridge called the Monongahela Connecting Bridge, which crosses the Allegheny Mon. And the old tracks of what was then the Pennsylvania Railroad to what was then called the Fourth Avenue Station, and a tunnel of the U.S. Steel that goes behind the U.S. Steel building to the old Penn Central passenger station. So once the Skybus came into town, it would have been on its own right away. But unfortunately, as I said, it stopped there. What the light rail vehicle system does, it really creates a T. And once you cross town from the time you cross the Monongahela River to the old Penn Central station, but you also make a insertion from that bar into the town, and you have a stop at Grand Street, a stop at Wood Street, and a stop at Gateway Center. And the subway is only really about less than 20% of the cost of the project, the real cost of the project is the equipment and the whole rebuilding of the line between South Hills Village and downtown Pittsburgh.
Well, I'm not too sure the public is aware of
that. I'm sure it is not. And many people think we're spending $400 million just on the subway. Actually, the subway, I think, is about $60 or $70 million of the total. And it will simply makes the system weatherproof, which is comfortable for the passenger and also for the operation. And it greatly shortens, increases the efficiency of the system, and it improves the street circulation. So that's the story of it. And as I say, the public, I'm sure, thinks that this is something that's driven to the New York subway, and it's going to be full of muggers and graffiti and all the troublesome things. I'm sure that won't happen.
That's so smart.
Yeah.
Are there any other major proposals aside from the subway?
Well, the other big one, which we did in the Port Authority, in my tenure, has been what's called the East Busway or East Pathway, which is a highway used only for buses, which will go from Wilkinsburg to downtown Pittsburgh, following the route of the Conrail tracks. Years ago, there used to be something called the Root Street Station in Shadyside, East Liberty Station, and Wilkinsburg Station. It was possible by moving the railroad tracks, consolidating them, to find enough right-of-way to build a highway just alongside them. And the buses will operate on that without any interference with any other vehicle. That was just an express line. So they will operate much more efficiently, and the ride, and everything will work far better, and that's a major project, which is costing about $120 million.
When does that go into
it? That should be operational next year.
I see.
And so these are two very big things. They're not the total answer, obviously, to our transit problems. And I continue to serve on the board of the authority, and presently other board members are very concerned about our problems. We're in a period of declining federal support, increasing cost of operation, increasing fares, which are resisted properly because they're new, add to the cost of living for the people. And you also lose ridership as you increase fares. So the authority is in a kind of a vice right now. And the only way out of it would be a substantial increase in county and state support from general taxation, or a special tax to be levied for the purpose of supporting the transit system. No transit system is self-supporting from the fare box. You just can't do that. And we've been making about 50% of our income from the fare box, which is high compared to many systems. But you really can't go beyond that. So that we really face a pretty critical issue. And meantime, the equipment gets older, the bus drivers get meaner, and the public gets unhappier. A lot of trouble. It's a very tough assignment. So I say I'm only a member of the board of directors. I don't have any whole problems of management, obviously.
And now your chairmanship of the Urban Redevelopment Authority of Pittsburgh.
Well, that's been my main preoccupation since Mayor Caligiuri appointed me to it. It's kind of a coming home for me because I started out, as you'll remember, if you go back about 40 years in these interviews, I started as executive director for the authority, and now I'm the chairman. And the executive director gets paid, and the chairman works for it.
Volunteer, I know.
But it's become almost a full-time responsibility, less so now than it was several years ago, because we had the job of reviving it as an ongoing agency. And recently, very recently, the mayor had so much confidence in the URA that he abolished the City Department of Housing and he abolished the City Department of Industrial Development and put all those functions
under
one umbrella in the URA. And so what we're concerned with is, well, the major projects, of course, in which we've been involved recently are the PPG Plaza project in Market Square, the U.S. Steel Plaza, where we had an important role in reshaping the land in and around Grand Street and the U.S. Steel Building, and the purchase of the old Penn Central Railroad Station and our hopes to get it restored and redeveloped, and the purchase of land in which we hope to have a new hotel and office building built opposite from the convention center. Those are the four large downtown projects in which we've been involved. A very strong general housing program, as strong as the laws and the banking system will permit, in which we make below market interest loans for home repair. And we've had a special heavy program for the north side, where we had sort of a renaissance within the renaissance.
The Manchester
region. The Manchester area, which is turning around and I think going to become a very desirable place. And it's being done without displacement of the existing population. And it's the restoration of many Victorian houses. And so unlike earlier redevelopment projects, it's not a clearance project. It's a restoration and an infill project. And we're also brought back to life a project which has been dormant for many years on the north shore of the Allegheny River between Allegheny Center and the river right across downtown Pittsburgh. And we're hoping that will become activated this year, which will mean that you'll have a continuous park strip from the stadium and from Menlo Park all the way up the Allegheny to Harris Island. And you will use that park as an inducement for new development on the Allegheny side, obviously the north side. So that we're hoping to get started this year. And we have other responsibilities, which are difficult, with what to do with Harris Island, for instance.
The environmental problem.
Actually, I think we cleaned it out with you, the cooperative arrangement with the state. The last nuisance industry on Harris Island has just been bought and will be eliminated in the next 30 months. And we're concerned now with what the reuse of the island would be. And we have programs in the Hill District and Homewood, and so many. It's really the cutting edge for the whole Renaissance Institute program.
It's a very broad spectrum.
And it's a very broad spectrum, yeah. And getting broader. So, as chairman, of course, I don't have the active role of day-to-day direction, but my job to help policy, help form policy, and exercise a general stimulative and reviewing role.
Is there any time frame for all this?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Open-ended.
Today and tomorrow.
Maybe this is the proper place now. I wonder if, I'm sure you saw the article about Shenley Farms and the conflict in the Post-Gazette.
Yes, yes.
I wonder what your feeling was
about
that.
Well, my feeling is I think they've overreached themselves in trying to get the second historical area declared.
They meaning the Pittsburgh landmark.
Well, it's not really a Pittsburgh landmark. That whole business is many things. You know, we pass laws, and they're for very good purposes, and we all support them. You want to have a law to protect endangered species, and I'm a great believer in protecting grizzly bears, and, baby seals, and whales, and all kinds of wildlife. But I'm sure when they passed that law, nobody was worried about the Tennessee snail darter. And when the people who opposed the Tennessee Valley Dam were trying to find something to oppose it on, they found this snail darter and said, well, you're going to endanger this species. Well, and they found that the snail darter actually was around in some other rivers after all, but it was used as a vehicle for stopping the project. Well, in this case, some of the residents of Shanley Farms are opposed to the construction of a new hotel on a site, on a parking lot site next to the Syria Mosque in Masonic Temple.
Right.
So very strongly opposed to it. And they're looking for means to either prevent it or control it to their taste, whatever their taste may be. And they've advanced this historic district proposal, really, not because they had a sudden urge to become historic, but because they see there's another way of, in effect, limiting or eliminating the construction of a new hotel.
How do you think things like that get resolved? It sounds as if they had this problem before.
Well, I guess sometimes they don't get resolved. Sometimes they will stall a project for a long time while you argue about it in the courts or legislative bodies. I'm convinced of two things. One is I have no objection. I used to live in Shenley Farms, and I still live very close to it. I just think for declaring it a historic district, I would love to see Shenley Farms stay the way it is. I went to high school there, as you did. When we took our gym walks, we used to walk through there.
Right.
You were envious, really, of anybody who lived in that area. So, no, I have no objection to the historic preservation of Shenley Farms. I do think, though, that the attempt to use it on the other side of Baird Street for the university area and the museum area and the PAA area is stretching the concept.
Mm-hmm. Let's stop here a minute. I think we're going to